is Brock and Salk.
I don't read the internet, guys.
Take the bull by the hands.
On Seattle Sports.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
And Brook Wire, you are it. And Brooke, you are.
Styled by Simply Seattle.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
Wow, some fascinating text response to Aaron Goldsmith there. Maybe we'll get back to some of that at some point here. But let's see. Graw's going to join us in 30 minutes. Excited to talk to him. It's been too long. I text with the Graw's a bunch, but I haven't had him on the show for a while. So looking forward to chatting with the Graw's father. Before we do it, though, Brock does have a draft profile today as we are just 3 weeks away from the round one of the NFL draft. He promised us a wide receiver. So let's hear who we got.
The Seattle Seahawks select.
This is Brock Heward's draft profile.
You want traits? Check. You want a vocal leader? Check.
At the end of the day, you have to say, okay, what's best for the organization?
Can you make people around you better? And can you bring people together?
Every day at 9 a.m. leading up to the draft.
You know, it's interesting looking back at these draft profiles over the years, and every class is a little bit different. And I find myself, as today I'm giving you wide receiver Taj Washington out of USC. Will be the only wide receiver I profile in these 20 picks. But as I look at the total group that I've done thus far, I'm looking at my board of what's to come ahead over the next couple weeks, 3 weeks, in fact, from today leading up to the NFL draft. This class, more than any I can remember, my draft profiles, is tremendous football player. Just a great football player. God, this guy just loves to play football. Right, all the times that we've heard Pete and John say, I just want guys that love football. Man, I have not put a list together leading up to a draft like this one, where time after time after time, I'm finding guys that just love ball. Maybe some of it is built out of the fact that we don't have as many underclassmen. We don't have as many juniors. In fact, the fewest in probably our 15 years of doing these draft profiles. Maybe some of it's because we've got fifth and sixth year guys making NIL money and transfer portal money and staying at their schools. But the top 150 or so of these players, and certainly the top 20 that I am profiling, and I will include Taj Washington on that list today, this is a group of young men that love to play the game. Taj Washington is undersized. He's going to be a late round pick, maybe a fifth, sixth, seventh round pick if you were to make a move on Taj Washington. He's a little guy that was born in Texas, played his high school football in Texas, went to Memphis University because he was small. I think coming out of high school, he was 150 pounds, in fact, when he went to Memphis. Grew up a little bit in his first year and then really popped his second year. Was a freshman All-American for the Tigers. 6 touchdowns, 43 receptions, and caught the eye of a Lincoln Riley and a USC to say, you know what, why don't you come out and follow us to Los Angeles and be a Trojan? And he caught their eye because he's a football player. He's touched 22 miles an hour on their performance evaluation, the stuff that they wear, all the GPS that they wear now at these college programs. So super quick guy, 5'10", 174 pounds at the combine, jumped 35 inches. That's quality. But the challenge and why he's going to be a late round pick, well, number one, the size I mentioned. Number two, he was only a 4.57 guy. So if you are of that ilk and of that frame, well, you better be able to run like the wind, like the guy out of Texas did at the combine running 4.2. You run 4.57, that's a lot slower than even the big receivers in this draft. You're going to tumble. You're going to fall. You're going to be a third-day pick. I have more background on Taj Washington than I do any other player I'm going to profile. And that's simply because, well, my little brother Luke was his receiver coach at USC. And I got to learn about not only the player, the young man, I got to learn about the person off the field. And Taj Washington checks every single box and then some. Was a great student, was a great leader. Amidst some kind of diva personalities in receiver rooms, he was not. He's a yes, sir. He is a no, sir. He will run through a wall for you. And over the last 3 years at SC, well, 2,400 yards, 163 receptions, 15 touchdowns, and that was surrounded by a lot of talent and a lot of guys that wanted their touches with the football. And all Taj Washington has done at every single turn is when he's been given an opportunity, he's maximized it. He's going to be given, more than likely, a late-round opportunity. If he were to come to Seattle, he would sit behind and probably on the practice squad next year with the Tyler Lockett's and the DKs and the Jackson Smith and Jigbas. But he can be a dynamic return guy. He can be the kind of teammate you want. And then maybe when a Tyler Lockett or some age out, or maybe when some guys get banged up, all of a sudden, hey, who's that Taj Washington guy? He just seems to be in the right spot, making the right play at every single turn. As my little brother Luke was telling me the other day, yeah, that testing didn't help him. Probably not going to get drafted where he wants to get drafted as far as any of the top four rounds. But wherever he goes, just mark my words, this is my little brother, wherever he goes, he's going to turn heads, and they're just not going to be able to cut him. They're not going to be able to move on from him because, as I said earlier, the guy simply loves to play the game of football. And every time he's been given any kind of chance, and, you know, it had to be at Memphis first because he's 150 pounds. And then at USC, well, he had to compete against a lot of other really talented, big physical guys. But who was the one left standing? It was always Taj Washington. He's got a heart as big as, well, much bigger than his frame is. And he's got the heart to play this game. And those are the kind of guys I profile more than ever in this class. And those are the kind of guys that when you stack more and more and more and more of them on your team, you just find a way to accomplish things and have success that maybe others didn't think you would have. Taj Washington, wide receiver, USC.
All right, so Taj Washington is today's profile. And look, Brock does a great sell job on all of these guys, right? I mean, the moment he tells you what it is he loves about them, it's easy to get excited. And so, yeah, I always
end up... We got a text from the 253 that said, Brock is just so performative when he does these things.
He does a little bit. I like that. I think that's the way they're kind of supposed to be. And I think he does a great job with it. But I really don't want them to draft a wide receiver. I think that'll be like a little knife in the stomach for me. Like, please, they need so much help up front. They need so much help in the middle of the field. And they have so much invested at the wide receiver spot. That would be a real challenge for me. It's not that I don't like the player, not that I don't trust everything Brock had to say, but unless there's some trades coming, I think that would be pretty hard for me to stomach, although it's challenging.
You'd like to see more of Dariq Young when he's healthy, right?
I would like to see a little Dariq Young. I also think this is a great wide receiver class, so it's a bummer when that's not one of your needs. Another reason that I would like to see them kind of, you know, maneuver around a little bit and change up the way that this roster is constructed. It's not the way I would want it to be constructed right now, and I know I sound like a bit of a broken record. Are you willing to make exceptions for certain players? Yeah, sure. I like the conversation we had yesterday about Mikey Sanrasil. I mean, that's like the third or fourth one we've had about the kid, out of defensive back out of Michigan. Really good player, strong physical presence. Does he play a position you need? No. Does he play a position that you already probably have too much of? Yes. So that's probably a name you're just going to have to move on from. But gosh, I the wide receiver thing would probably kill me a little bit. That would be...
Even if it was seventh round?
All right. Seventh round. I didn't realize...
He's saying he's going to go later.
I didn't think it was going to be that late, though. I was still thinking this was like a fourth or fifth round pick. And, you know, unfortunately, because you've given up your second and one of your thirds, those two fourth round picks are like the meat of your draft, unfortunately. So we'll see where it goes 3 weeks from tonight. We'll see what they do with the number 16 pick. We'll come back with everything you need to know. And then the return of the Grozfather. It's Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
I've been talking about this all morning. Just an ugly baseball game for the Mariners yesterday. I remember yesterday morning mentioning that, you know, there are, what, a third of the games over the course of a year you know you're going to lose, a third you know you're going to win, and it really matters what you do with the third in the middle. I thought that the game on Tuesday was one of those games you were just going to lose. And if that's the case, then yesterday was really one of those games, like doubly so, triply so, whatever the right word is. It was a mess from start to finish. Offense, defense, pitching. It was all bad. Scott was asked about Kirby's stuff.
It was good. We've seen better. You know, I think the sharpness, the crispness to the fastball, part of it was he just never really got any rhythm to get into all of his pitches. So, again, you know, he starts off, he had a really good curveball last time out. He goes to the curveball, hits the guy in the foot in the first inning, and then, you know, it just kind of unraveled from there. Again, a lot going on out there. I think, you know, he, like all young pitchers, you get frustrated at times, and he got a little frustrated today, and he'll have to learn from that.
The only phrases and things that worry me in there are unraveled and frustrated. Those are the things that sort of the next step for George Kirby. To control things when they're not going the way he wants them to. He's such a fine control person and control pitcher. But what do you do when things get out of your control a little bit? I think that's going to be one of the next steps from him. And I think that's what I'm hearing from Scott as I listen to him there. All that being said, there's a lot more to it than just George Kirby yesterday. The defense was awful. And quite frankly, the offense has been anemic for seven games.
Really coming in the ballpark today. I felt good about, where our chances were. I don't think we played near what we're capable of offensively yet, but felt good about, get into a tight game and figure out a way to win it and move on down the road, but it didn't happen. So, first homestand, end up 3-4, didn't do much offensively at all. And, we got to have to get that going. We go out on the road trip, but disappointing. You shouldn't win a game. You shouldn't be in a game if you play like that. We didn't play well. Our guys know it. We're capable of much better, and we need to pick it up there.
They certainly are going to have to. But again, as Scott knows, still real early.
Yeah, just inconsistent. I think from at bat to at bat, we've seen a couple guys. I think Ty swung the bat pretty good early on. Haney's had pretty consistent, quality at bats. But up and down the lineup, and it's one thing we felt really good about this team. We put it together. I thought the lineup was going to be a lot deeper than it had been here in a while. And it looks great on paper. You got to go out and do it. And our guys will get it done. I really believe it. It's such a long season, gang. I think in an NFL season, we're not even to halftime in the first game yet. Put that in perspective. So everybody wants to jump off, and it's halftime of the first game of an NFL season is where we're at. So we have a lot of baseball yet ahead of us.
Well, Scott should remember that plenty of people are ready to jump off at halftime of an NFL game, even the first one of the season. So they're off today. They go to Milwaukee, and they'll pick things back up tomorrow. Logan Gilbert on the Hill, as I said, Milwaukee, and then on to Toronto after that.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
All right, 3 weeks away now from the NFL draft. We spoke to Matt Miller, ESPN draft analyst, yesterday, who I just think does a tremendous job. You should go listen to that whole thing. You can find it at seattlesports.com or on the app. But one of the interesting things in there was just trying to get a sense as to where he would put Sam Howell compared to the six quarterbacks or so that are in this draft. And the answer, probably not what you were hoping to hear.
I famously didn't like Sam Howell and took a lot of grief for that, especially amongst Commanders fans once he was drafted. I thought he was, I could find the exact grade. I had him rated at 74 overall. I thought he was like a low end, really a high backup guy. My comp for him was Colt McCoy. I thought he would just be, a good QB2 in the NFL. So when I look at these guys, I would take, all the top six way over him. Williams, Daniels, May, McCarthy, Nix, Penix, in whatever order you want to put them in. All those guys are much higher than him. I think Howell, even Spencer Rattler, I would take Spencer Rattler over Sam Howell. And that's not based on me saying, okay, I watched the struggle in Washington last year. That's based on where I had him before the draft.
Yikes. Put that into context. Doesn't mean he's not going to be a good player, but that's certainly a concerning conversation. I don't know what the Seahawks are going to do with the 16 pick. I don't know if they're going to be able to find a quarterback in this draft. I do still think that that's a position of need for them, that they don't yet have their guy that I think is going to bring them to a Super Bowl. So we'll see if this is the year or if they're waiting at least one more to try to find that next guy who is your franchise quarterback.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Another brutal game for the Kraken. It just seems like anytime they go up against a team with some real talent that isn't Anaheim or maybe San Jose, you see the level of struggle that you saw again last night. That was not a pretty game. They lose 5-2. They're now mathematically eliminated from the playoffs as well. So that's going to pretty much do it for them. I did see Jeff Baker wondering what will happen next with their organization. He said Dave Haxtell is going to finish out the season. There's only, seven games left in the year. But what happens next, right? Is there going to be a conversation about Haxtell? Is there going to be a conversation about Ron Francis? That's 2 out of 3 years that they have largely disappointed. I think everyone's willing to give a big pass on year one. Year two, they exceeded expectations. But this year, I think you were sort of hoping they would start to take the next step. And instead, that step was one giant one backwards. So just a few more games left to go, and then it'll be on to the offseason for the Kraken. That is everything you need to know. Quarter past every hour.
Seem a little on edge. Everything all right?
What do you mean?
I don't know. You came in. You're like, It seemed like you're a little upset.
I'm not upset. I have a brief old man rant. Do you want a brief old man rant?
What category of old man is this? Like old dad, old off my lawn,
old baseball old fan, old baseball fan dad.
Yeah, let's go.
You got a game.
No, thank you.
You got.
Nope, we're in. More.
Right,
well,
then we got to go
old.
To break. You got a game on in the other room, right?
Yes.
More just has whatever's on MLB Network
Mets
on
Tigers.
In the other room. Mets Tigers. I'm looking at that, and you know what it makes me think? We need to stop with the interleague play throughout the year. The Mets should not be playing the Tigers on April 4th. They just shouldn't. It doesn't make any sense. The Tigers should be playing the Royals. The Tigers should be playing the White Sox. The Mets should be playing the Phillies. Okay, fine. Maybe the Tigers should be playing Cleveland. Or maybe the Tigers should be playing the Houston Astros. But they shouldn't be playing the Mets today. It's April 4th. It was a really cool experiment when they first went to the interleague play all those years ago, and we got the, you know, the Subway Series and the Bay Area Series.
Yeah, it felt like a treat.
And it was great. It was cool. It was interesting. It was unique. Watching the Mets and the Tigers on April 4th is not a treat. It's not unique.
You're right.
It's not cool.
This is old man because all of those players that are playing in this game right now grew up watching interleague play.
I know. And fine, but at least then they watched it where you only played a handful of interleague games. You played one series apiece against one division and then maybe your natural rival. And that was it. I don't need to see the Mariners take on the Reds. I don't. I don't need to watch the Mets take on the, you know, whoever else. I don't need to watch the Mariners and Brewers this week. Why are these teams playing each other?
So there's nothing
in April?
Redeeming it about it to you at all.
Not anymore.
Not anymore.
Not anymore. And I know that it's like in the interest of uniformity and fairness and that the leagues are not as, you know, different as they used to be now that the rules are the same and, you know, the umpires are the same. Like they've already made so many changes to make it one league as opposed to two. But the interleague thing is like it's just too many games against other teams that I don't care about. Go back. I want to see more games against the American League.
As someone who's a military brat and always grew up being in the city of not the team that they grew up rooting for, I will say it's nice because, like, when I lived in Colorado and I wanted to go to Red Sox games, they came every 5 years.
Yeah. Yeah. That's when they should come.
No. Wow.
Never. Or when they meet in the World Series. Play two different leagues. I just don't need the interleague thing to continue the way it is. All right, that's my old man rant. The Groz, who was probably going to tell me I'm crazy, will join us next. Can't wait for the Groz. It's Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710.
You're listening to Brock and Salk.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
All right, we're going to be ranking here in 15 minutes. Apparently a polarizing take on interleague play. Totally agree with Salk. Interleague play is out of control, devalues the World Series, makes interleague games less special. Totally, that's kind of the point I'm trying to make. 206, Salk, you're missing the point. It has nothing to do with fairness. MLB wants Julio available to all Major League fans and in their stadiums at least once every year. I know, I understand the reasons they do it. I just think that it is the wrong call. Like, I just think it unfortunately devalues some of that. And I just, some of these matchups feel totally random. Yeah, I don't mind seeing more matchups against the teams I'm familiar with. I'm totally fine with that. Heck, when I was a kid, there was even more of that. There were fewer teams and you didn't play anybody from the other league ever. And it was just fine. Yeah, you just got really, really used to seeing the same teams. And you found that you knew the rest of the league, I think, better, at least the American League or whatever league you were in, because you were constantly watching the same players over and over again. Yeah, I always thought that was a good thing. All right, I've been waiting for this. I've been excited. You know the voice. The Groz joins us right now. Groz Father, how are you?
Michael, it's good to hear your voice, my friend.
Your voice sounds wonderful. You sound great. It's just great to hear your voice.
Thank you very much. I haven't done anything in a long time, so you kind of save it a little bit.
Give us a quick update on you. How are you doing in general?
Racked in pain, but still okay.
I don't mean to laugh, but you have such a positive spirit about everything you do that you just sort of make me chuckle. Well, you know, we're thinking about you certainly in that regard and always hoping for the best. Let's talk some sports and get your mind off of that pain. Let's start. You know what? Instead of starting with the Mariners, can I go back a couple months because it's been that long since we've had you on? What did you make of the end of the road for Pete? I know how many times we quoted you saying you never want to get tired of winning. Did the Seahawks get tired of winning or was it time?
It's a great question. I mean, you know, what were they, 2 games under 500 the previous couple of years? So you could argue that wasn't what was going on. But I thought it was kind of interesting to see when they had the players, you know, rate things that they liked and didn't like about their organizations, that the Seahawks rated the only A they gave out was to Pete Carroll, the coach. So, I mean, it's a huge change. I mean, it's just a huge change. And you know, I think they probably made the right move. I mean, you're going to go into a rebuild with Pete entirely, if that's what you're looking at doing. You're going to have to break a new quarterback in here in a year or two anyway, it looks like. So I don't think it was quite doing, you know, what I dread, which is what you said, which is, you know, getting tired of winning. But they win a lot with him, and it's going to be very difficult to replace him. I don't think there's any question about that. What struck me, Mike, is how much air had to be left out of that building when he left. I mean, you talk about a gigantic organic presence that all of a sudden is gone. I mean, you know, nothing against the new coach or anything like that, but that personality that invigorated that entire building is gone now. So it'll be interesting to see how they make the transition. No, I don't really think they made a mistake by doing it at the wrong time. They hadn't been winning much, but boy, they did a lot of it when he was here, and he's going to be tough to replace.
When I hear you say, you know, Pete wasn't the right guy for a rebuild, is that the direction you think they're going now, is kind of rebuilding this thing?
I don't think they're planning on going in that direction, but I think that's kind of what it's going to look like a little bit. You know, you had some age at some key positions. You're definitely changing from Bobby Wagner now, and the influence he's had on the defense. The safety's changing. You know, you got a defensive line that you're building. You've got some veterans in there, but you got some young guys. Same thing on the offensive line. You're going to have big questions with wide receivers coming up. So I don't want to say rebuild, but you're certainly going to change things. You know, in the NFL, you get a year to rebuild.
Maybe.
I mean, there's no 5-year plan. You know, there's none of that going on. So I think a different approach is what they were looking to do, and that's what they're going to have. And the question is, did they make the right choice? I mean, for every assistant that's been Sean McVay, there's a Josh McDaniel. And you know, when you bring in a guy who doesn't have much head coaching experience, you kind of run that risk. So, you know, we'll all see.
Love it. Talking to the Groz, you certainly know the voice, and great to have him here on the show and on the station. We also saw just massive sea change at the University of Washington. Oh. If there was a key position that could change over in the last couple months, it has. I don't even really know what the right question is other than what the heck?
And going to the Big Ten. I mean, it's the chaos in college sports can be summed up by what the Huskies went through for the last 6 months. I mean, or 3 months or whatever it was, you know, just a total sea change. Now, all of a sudden looking at, you know, having conference opponents in New Jersey and in Maryland. I mean, the whole question of what's going in there. You got a new athletic director new basketball coach who we'll see how long he stays here. But you've got him. You got a new football coach who is work cut out for him. You know, I mean, Kalen DeBoer, it looks like some sort of special savant coach. And you've lost him now, so your football team is in kind of a square one situation going into the Big Ten. It typifies college sports and the way they let college athletics get out of control a little bit. And Washington's an example of it. I mean, I don't really know how to predict what's going to come up in the future. It's really, really hard to figure. But, you know, it was really unfortunate after having such a great year and not just coming up a little short in that championship game that everything could seemingly fall apart, and that's what it looks like from the outside.
Yeah, it is a shame kind of the way it's all gone down. Brock and I were arguing a little bit earlier about this Super League, and I know you're not as up on everything as you once were, not doing a daily show. I don't know if you read about this yet, that, you know, it's like 70 teams that they would try to put together into one big league, and then another 10 that would kind of come and go with relegation, almost like in soccer. And then collectively bargain it so that somebody would actually be in charge. The players would get a cut. They would actually be paid for being the product, but they wouldn't be able to just transfer every single year whenever they wanted, because it's really hard to build a team that way. Like, how do you build a team when you have no idea whether, you know, the players are even going to be there from year to year?
Right. You can't have any core players because you only play for 4 years. So, you know, it's they're going to have to be. It makes sense to me because they got to start from scratch somewhere. And if they do that, the NCAA won't have anything to do with it. They'll make up their own rules. They'll set it up the way they want it. They don't have to pay attention to the NCAA, and they won't. And, you know, the players are due the money, and that's the way it's going to be. You know, NAL, it's going to be awfully hard to put that genie back in the bottle. It's going to be awfully hard to do that when you've already had it going at a rate that people are probably pretty surprised at, might be even more surprised to know how extensive it is and how many different schools are making money on or players are making money at that, places you never would have expected. So I think I can see that as a future for football, but that's only for football. I mean, that's nothing else for football. So I'd be more surprised, Mike, if that didn't happen than if it did.
Do you end up watching some of the women's tournament this year? Just what an incredible story that. I mean, how long were you on the radio, Graz? What was your first year doing sports radio?
1970. Sports radio was probably 89. First year on the radio was 73.
Let's take 1989 as a number. Could you have ever imagined in 1989 that we would be leading our show talking about the women's college final, Final Four, that 12.5 million people on average were watching an Elite Eight game, and that number is going to rise here over the next few weeks, and that the level of basketball would be so incredibly fun to watch?
And take it a step further, watching Iowa play LSU.
Right, exactly.
In Seattle, and can't wait to see it. No, I never did think we'd see it. I think it's spectacular. It's fun. I don't want to make it like a throwback to what things were, because I don't feel about it that way. But I just feel like it's new and it's shiny. Yep. And it's fun to watch. And I absolutely watched it. I think, it's crazy. If you're a basketball fan, you got to get caught up in what Caitlin Clark is. And I really will date it back to that that game last year. I think it was in South Carolina or against LSU, one of the two, and really getting caught up in it as well. So, yes, I have been watching it. I'm going to be watching, the both final games, for that matter. 12 million fans, 12 million viewers is unbelievable, as I'm sure you guys know and have said. So it's a bright, shining moment for the NCAA in a pretty lost couple of years.
Who does she remind you of? Is there a comp for Caitlin Clark?
Well, I don't think so. I mean, she reminds me of no one. I'll start comparing people to her from now on.
Yeah, no kidding. Reggie Miller, and I was kind of thinking a little Reggie Miller, Larry Bird combo because of the passing and because of how she's just able to run around the court the entire night. And you just got to chase her through all those screens.
Yeah, I mean, that's not a bad one. I mean, she's just as good without the basketball as she is with it. And the Bird thing is apt as well. They're saying that when she comes to the WNBA, she'll have a tough, maybe a tougher time than we think breaking in. I'm not so sure I agree with that. I think she's going to step in and be ready to play right away. I mean, it may be a little more physical, but I mean, her talent is obvious. And it's been really something to see, and it's going to infuse that sport big time.
That's for sure. All right, Graz, I've been avoiding this for the last 5 minutes, but I should probably ask you, what do you make of the Mariners off season and now the first 7 games of this Mariners season?
Oh my God, my God, my God. I mean, it's it's 7 games, so it's not put a gun to your head stuff, but they're exactly what they were. They're exactly what they were. They strike out too much. They don't put the game in motion. The defense is terrible. Now their pitching is going to be good. It hasn't been good, as good as it needs to be. It probably will be better because they got the great arms there. But I mean, it seems to me that they haven't taken advantage of the rule changes. The rest of the league is putting the game in motion, it feels like, and they're not. Every free agent acquisition they made this year came with a but or an if, as opposed to sure things. I think it's understandable that people are beyond frustrated with it, because this is what the game has been for the past couple of years. And they've got the pitching that they're going to be. They're not going anywhere. They're not going to. I don't think they're going to fall 20 games behind or anything like that, because they've got great pitching. But is that enough to win this division? I don't think so. I don't think they look as good as Houston. I don't think they look as good as the Rangers. And they didn't have a good offseason as either one of them. So, I think they're treading water a little bit. And they need some guys who haven't stepped up yet to step up big time. And until that happens, they're going to hear a lot more of the boos that they heard last night.
Yeah, I was there yesterday, and I mean, look, anytime you play defense like that, it's going to lead to just incredible frustration, and the Boo Birds did come out pretty early in that one. I think there's a lot of merit to what you said. I also think it's fair to, Julio hasn't hit yet, right? I mean, Garver has, I mean, they got their top 3 or 4 guys haven't hit a home run yet through the first, opening homestand. I'm pretty sure Julio's going to hit a few. I'm pretty sure, I feel like these guys are eventually going to do a little more than we've seen.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, look, Julio, I mean, he's still a cut above. And all you got to do is think about last August to know what he's capable of, which is the most of any player in baseball. And he can be as good as anyone. But, you know, you hear stuff about it's early and things like that. What if this team missed the playoffs by a game or two the last couple of years or within a game or two?
Just last
there is
year,
no
yeah.
early if you're a contender. There is no early. Every game counts. And it's something that you know, makes it harder for you on the back end. So, you know, they can't give games away like this. And that's not what it feels like to me. It feels like they're giving them away. I just really, really would like to see them take advantage of the rule changes. I mean, I can't emphasize that enough. I mean, you know, it's not a strikeout walk, you know, league anymore. I mean, they've made some changes to put the game in motion, and you're better off if you do it. And it makes the game more exciting for that matter. I mean, you know, games like yesterday, Mike, I mean, 8-0 is never fun. But, you know, when you, like you pointed out, when you're playing defense terribly and you're striking out all the time, it's terrible. It's unwatchable. And you know, baseball decided it was unwatchable by making those rule changes. So, you know, winning is the only thing that will solve it. And, you know, I think those guys know that their heads are on the chopping block if they don't win this year. And that's, you know, I mean, win 90 games, you know, be good. You know, you can't guarantee the playoffs or anything like that, but be good.
Yep.
And right now they don't look like they've got that.
Graz, I wish I could just show you the entire text line right now and the flood of excitement of people hearing your voice. Everybody loves you. I love you. Just great to have you on, even just for a few minutes. And I'm sorry it's been so long. Let's make sure we do it again. And I owe you lunch as well.
It sounds great. I really appreciate it. It's great to talk with everyone. Great to hear you guys. You're sounding terrific. That's for the station, for everyone there. I mean, it's just wonderful to hear you guys. So thanks very much, Michael, and let's do it soon.
We'll do. Miss you, man. There's the Graz father. He is Avery, my oldest daughter. He is her Graz father. That's a true story. Ron Avery was being born in 2012. I said to the Graz, hey, I would like to ask you something. I would like you to be Graz father to my baby. And he says, oh, my gosh, well, what does that entail? I said, nothing. He says, I'm in.
Perfect job.
And so he's been her Graz father ever since. I don't know if they've ever met. But, yes, he is officially Avery's Graz father. And there you go. There's the Graz. Love
so
the man.
So many fun Graz stories.
He is
I can't
best.
Tell on the air, but I just love him.
I know. I owe him lunch. I got to go have lunch with him again. I just, every time I do, I remember how much I just adore that man. All right. Yeah. You know what it's time for? Something more truly adores. It's time for Ranked.
Got a list? Time to put it in order.
Fred Dwumfor's house. Top five meals that I have ever had.
This is Ranked.
To be honest, that list was really biased.
Every morning at 9:45 on Brock and Salk.
Top 10 list. I'm not buying it.
Ranked.
We got Rivers today, huh?
Rivers.
Ranking Rivers, like Three exactly River Stadium.
Oh, yeah, Three River Stadium.
And then what was the old Red Stadium? Riverfront Stadium?
Riverbank?
I think it was Riverfront.
Riverfront? Okay, because I know they call that area now the Banks.
Yeah, I think it was Riverfront Stadium.
Okay, Riverfront. That sounds a lot more right.
I got a lot of other ones here. Okay,
that's I love that.
Delta Ray. We got songs from Pocahontas.
Waiting just around the river.
Very dramatic, that one.
I rewatched that as an adult. I was like, this is a lot different than I
don't think you want to do that if you can avoid it.
A lot different.
How about some Timberlake? That's a good
one.
That was
some new music recently.
How is it?
I don't know.
Okay.
I decided that I was going to finally have to just admit to myself, not working in pop radio, that I don't have to listen to the new pop music when it comes out.
I'm good.
I can leave it.
You got Riverboat Ron, of course. You got River Phoenix.
Did you like that show, River Monsters, where the guy like pulls out the big old fish and snakes?
I mean, no,
and stuff.
But that sounds like my worst nightmare. Yeah. I didn't know it existed. Don't tell me about that.
I did like an episode or two of that with my parents, and I felt like he never actually found the river monster.
Thank God.
There was always all this buildup of him looking for one.
Yeah, it's pretty dramatic.
Of course, you got River Craycraft, ex-Coug wide receiver. Now, Justin, this is interesting here. When we, you know, Justin writes some of this stuff down. You wrote Doc/Joan Rivers.
Yeah.
Is that because you think they're the same person? You think they're married?
No.
Like, why Doc/Joan?
That's a great question, Salk. It's because if I sometimes make these lists too long, they go into two pages.
Right. You don't want that.
So
I mean,
I
could have understood Doc/Austin, his son, but I was a little surprised to see Doc/Joan.
Sometimes make the list too long.
Seeing a little surprise.
Every time.
I don't want to go into two pages.
We got some Creedence. Green River, and of course you also around here know about the
Green River Community College. Yes, I do.
And the Green River.
And the Community College. Yes,
and one other Green River.
Nope.
No, we're not even going to mention that. Wow, amazing.
Just the Community College.
All right. One of my dad's favorite bands from the 70s is the Little River Band.
Yeah.
song.
I feel like a band.
Yeah, very Eagles-like, right?
Did they open?
They probably have at some point.
Who did you see open for them?
Steely Dan.
Steely Dan.
Same.
Okay.
That's all basically the same.
My bad.
We go to the 90s with some live. Pain. That's right. Pain lies right there on the riverside. Where else would it be?
Nowhere. Yeah. I used to want Dolphins Cry as my intro music for baseball when I was playing it.
Not Operation Spirit?
No, you know what I ended up going with? This is a song that we have in the system that's on this list.
Really?
Collective Soul.
Oh, I have that one here. Hold on. It wasn't in the top five, but I'm happy to play it.
This was a walk-up song for me in high school.
Where? I don't see it. Hold on. Let me play one more, and then we'll play that one afterwards. This is one of my favorites. Not going to make the top five, but just because it's in the system...
Rivers, Rodriguez, report.
Of course, that's from Die Hard. Have to have that one in
we
there.
We have a request.
Yeah.
253 says, can I get an honorable mention? My last name is Rios, which is Spanish for Rivers.
Oh.
Yes, you can.
Didn't even know that. Great, great idea. Yes. Alex Rios, of course, former Toronto Blue Jay.
This was the...
Oh, yeah, I know this song.
Yeah, remember this riff? This was one of two songs that I use as my walk-up.
It's a good one.
It's a great riff.
Yeah, it's got a good, yeah, I like that. That's a good one.
Thank you.
Well done.
He would yell at you, and it would shock you at first, because you were like, he's yelling at me?
Yeah.
And I feel like part of Phillip's problem was he inspired defensive players so much that you guys always got their best effort.
Yeah, that's Phillip Rivers. Course going to be on this list.
Not top five.
Not top five. You got let's see, The River with Mel Gibson, The River Wild with Meryl Streep. I'm told that was filmed in
Olivia Montana. Hello,
Olivia Montana.
Yeah,
yes.
There was no hotels or places for these people to stay, so they all had to rent out houses.
Another Montana related movie and book, A River Runs Through It.
Oh, yes, indeed.
Read that book.
Very popular.
Mystic River, read the book and saw the movie.
Great one.
Wind River. If you're ever looking for a great movie to watch one night, watch Wind River. It's so good.
One night? It's kind of a dark one.
Oh, it's very dark, yeah. But it's sort of in the same vein as like, what's a movie? Hell or High Water, which I just love.
Okay.
There's a few others.
The Jeremy Renner movie, yeah. Wind River.
Yes. And Ben Foster, I believe. I might have that wrong.
Elizabeth Olsen.
It's a really good movie. Really, 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 really good movie. We got some Billy Joel. In the middle of the night. Right. That's the River of Dreams.
You do
thanks,
not like Billy Joel.
No, I don't. We got a little Weezer because that's Rivers Cuomo. I like this song, though.
Do you like that? Thanks for all. Yeah.
All right. You ready for the top five? I know Maura is. Let's see. Number five. Little Michael Flatley, little river dance.
It's not the same without the dance.
Huh?
It's not the same without the dance.
No, it's not. But there you go.
Did we get over the river and through the woods?
I thought of it. I didn't read it. I'm sorry. I didn't read that or Riverdale. I didn't mention the play Big River, which is the Huck Finn story. Saw that with my grandparents when I was a kid. I missed
it. You guys remember Pete Carroll's advice to Brock?
Say less.
You don't have to say everything. That comes to your head.
And ranks for it. It's important that we cover all the bases.
It's pretty important. Number four. Talking Heads, Take Me to the River.
I just think of the singing bass. Wasn't
that's
that,
all I think of with that
fish,
song, too.
Singing
yeah,
bass,
that's yeah. what those, the plaque of
friend of mine had a one that was a soul. It sang, I'm a soul man.
Oh, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. I saw somebody that had a tattoo of the talking bass in it. If you asked about it, you had to sing.
That's ridiculous.
People stopped asking.
This one wasn't in the top five, but I meant to play it, and I do love this song.
By the rivers of Babylon.
Sublime, singing Rivers of Babylon, which was a cover. But it's a great song. Anyway.
Okay.
All right, where are we? Number three. This one's a classic. I mean, going
way... Well, when you guys get to your top five and then start doing honorable mentions.
That's just because I forgot that one. Sorry. I forgot it. I wanted people to hear it. I wanted to hear it myself, and unfortunately... I'd forgotten it.
It wasn't just one. You guys number mentioned three. A bunch
number
of
three, Maura.
Moon River, wider than a mile.
Is this Andy Williams version?
Yeah.
Nice.
Someday. I like it. I'm glad you got to this because we did get some text asking or saying Moon River is the best. Yeah.
Moon River, number two. Number three, excuse me. Number two, staying local, Mad Season. This one's for Brady Henderson. On the side project, Bad Season, doing River of Deceit.
I know you're
two.
Not going to do it, number one, but Garth Brooks' The River is fantastic.
I mean, I don't know it, so it would be hard for me to do it.
Okay, well, I'm just making sure it gets a mention.
No, number one, I think, is going to be a lot of people's favorites.
From what I've heard, you're using your paper not for writing, but for rolling doobies. You're going to be doing a lot of doobie rolling when you're living in a van down by the river.
There you go. Down by the river. All right, we got to run.
To go to the atmospheric river? I forgot about those.
Those are fun.
That's a good number one. I appreciate it.
Okay, well, tonight, Ludacris, Mora, Justin, G, and I will all be there. We'll have a full report for you guys tomorrow and hopefully some pictures of whatever G's going to make me wear. Stick around for Bump and Stacey next, and we'll catch you guys tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. Until then, the hay. It's in the barn. See everybody.
Get to the chopper!